Hey everyone, welcome to the Matt Report, where I interview folks who make a living using WordPress. Today, I'm joined by Jason Coleman. Jason, how are you? How's everything going on your end?
Life is good.
So, Jason, let's talk about the journey of you starting your business, your freelance, your digital business, getting into WordPress. So, introduce us or introduce yourself to us, who you are and what you do.
Yeah, so I started out with my own company in 2006. Before that, for a couple of years, I worked at Accenture, which is a big consulting firm doing, I actually worked on some early tablets, those HP tablets from many years ago, which was kind of fun. And I worked doing SAP installation, supply chain stuff, so some boring stuff, and got out of there as soon as I could. And then my wife, who's my current business partner as well, at the time was just a girlfriend, and she had graduated from college, and prior to that, she took over my like web design business from college, so I did websites on the side, and she lined up some clients for the summer of 2006 when she graduated and said, hey, I got enough clients to make money, I'm not going to look for a real job, I'm going to do this, and so I kind of helped her out as while I was at Accenture, and then we got so many clients that were like, hey, we should really try to, you know, do this freelance thing. And also we launched a site called winelog.net, which is kind of a social network for wine drinkers. So we're like, hey, well, we'll do all this. I went on sabbatical and eventually left Accenture to start that business. So my wife and I started this freelance business where she handles the design end and I'm more on the programming end. And there's a lot of overlap. And the joke there is that I'm teaching her programming as we go along. And I'm like, in a few years, you know, she's going to do everything and I can retire. So we didn't really get into, we did get into WordPress, not kind of business-wise, but a little bit at the time. A couple of friends started investing blog, investorgeeks.com, which was my first experience with WordPress. It was around version 1.5, I think, back then. So we just did some blogging with it, and I didn't use it, you know, as a tool. We did .NET programming and PHP programming and simple static websites. I started to focus on PHP and e-commerce sites. A couple of our e-commerce clients also wanted a blog, so we built WordPress blogs for them. At the same time, with Investor Geeks, we were kind of experimenting. I was hacking the core to get it to work. The plugin architecture was already there, but I was kind of like, I was very anti-framework from some of the Java stuff I did at Accenture. And so I was always like, you know, I'd rather do it myself. But actually, as the plugin architecture got better, and I learned it more, I was like, hey, this is the right way to go about it. And I started to realize, you know, that we could use WordPress for more of our projects. So like maybe we could use it not just for the blog, let's use it as a CMS. You know, that was as easy as it is nowadays even. And so we started using it for static sites as a CMS. We started using it for more applications and stuff. We actually, around the 2006, 2007 time, launched one of like the earliest e-commerce websites on WordPress. And we had custom built an e-commerce plugin. I don't know if WP Commerce was out yet, but if it was young. I know when we saw WP Commerce, it was really rough. And the plugin we had, you know, was a lot better, which kind of transitions to this point in our career where we're trying to, you know, I saw WP Commerce, which at the time was not as good as our product. You know, I'm like, hey, our product's better. And then over time at WordCamps, and I see the WP Commerce guys, and they're like, yeah, we sell a plugin, and we're making millions of dollars and have this large business out of it. And I'm like, well, wait, why isn't that me? I have, you know, a better product, but they have, you know, all this business. So I started thinking about, instead of doing these consulting projects where we make technology and give it to someone and hope that they, you know, build something great on their business, and then we go on to the next project, which is something completely different, and kind of start over from scratch. We're not really building on things. So we started thinking, you know, like we make really good stuff. We have the skills and the knowledge at this point. Let's, you know, focus. And so at that time, we had a few clients who wanted membership sites. And we had considered using our e-commerce plugin or one of the, I think S2 members is another free membership plugin for WordPress was out at the time. But we didn't like either to build it on our e-commerce or to use S2 members. So we're like, hey, we'll build it from scratch. And so we started thinking, hey, let's build this into a plugin that we can sell as a premium plugin. And also let's make our consulting business not just we'll do anything on WordPress, but we build membership websites on WordPress. So the idea there is to focus on a niche so that we become the WordPress membership experts. And we can charge a higher rate when people, we can show them like, hey, we did exactly what we're delivering to you. It's kind of puts people at ease, and you can charge a higher price for the work that you're delivering because there's less, you know, questions involved with delivering. And then also for us, because we're iterating on the same thing over and over again, it's easier for us to automate systems and bring on help and kind of make delivering the membership site a lot smoother, so that, you know, we basically are charging a higher margin for the rate that we're doing, for the work that we're doing, because we're doing not the exact same thing, but primarily the same thing over and over again.
Right. Yeah. But before we go too deep into that business, and I definitely want to talk about that, taking a few steps back, was your aha moment to use WordPress, was that when you realized that because I hear this a lot from developers, is they just want to use, they don't want to use frameworks, they want to do it themselves. Taking a few steps back, what was that aha moment to say, I'm going to make a living using this WordPress, or at least I'm going to use WordPress to further myself?
Yeah. So one of the early sites we launched outside of WordPress was mylive.net, which is custom built in PHP, and we kind of built our own framework for it. And that's still a live site, mylive.net, and it's kind of neglected, and we're trying to figure out what to do with it. As working with that, building it from the ground up, when there's security issues or user management issues, like, I have to fix it, right? And it's something completely different. As our day-to-day became doing, like, CMS sites on WordPress and that kind of thing, like, I'd have to switch from WordPress mode to MindLog PHP framework mode. Whereas, you know, with WordPress, if there's a security issue or, you know, some kind of, you know, UI enhancement or a new thing comes out, someone else already patched it in core or made the plugin. So it's kind of this idea that there's a whole community supporting my base system instead of I have to do everything myself, you know?
Yeah.
And security is a big one, because actually, like, in 2006, you know, a lot of people, we just didn't know what needed to be done, you know, security-wise with, you know, filtering inputs and stuff like that. It was kind of, you know, fresh, like a lot, some people, I guess, did. But I mean, even, you know, some of the techniques that the spammers and the hackers and all these things were kind of coming out of the woodwork. So there's all these really big issues that are handled by the WordPress core team wonderfully that, like, I was mimicking on my own system. And I'm like, why don't I just use WordPress for the user engine and kind of the ground level and build on top of that? So as some kind of custom projects started coming in, like e-commerce, and actually, I guess e-commerce was one of the big things too. We worked with OS Commerce, which was another kind of PHP open source e-commerce plugin, and we built a WordPress site to go alongside of it. So we tweaked OS Commerce and WordPress to look the same. So their site, kind of, you can tell WordPress was powering this page and OS Commerce was powering this page. And we tied them together a little bit. So, like, even the OS Commerce was, like, pulling the header from the WordPress theme and stuff like that. It was really kind of, really neat coding wise. But OS Commerce code was really ugly, in my opinion. And I mean, I guess I think of someone like that, it was old, you know, it was kind of, didn't use modern, you know, PHP programming techniques. And so it was really hard to work with. So then when someone else was like, hey, build us an e-commerce site just like this other one, that's when we started thinking, you know, instead of using OS Commerce, let's just build the interface into WordPress. You know, they're already logging into WordPress to edit a page, you know, stay in there and edit their products. So I guess that was happening around the same time we were struggling with MindLog, keeping it up to date. You know, MindLog's still on custom framework, but if I build it again now, I would definitely, you know, build it in WordPress.
Okay. That was my next question, to see if MindLog was still running that frame, running on your framework or WordPress.
Yeah.
What was your very first, for the freelancers out there that are listening to this, what was your first paid WordPress? Do you remember your first paid WordPress client or job aside from the MindLog stuff?
Let me think
that far back.
Yeah. Let me think. First up, so Investor Geeks was the first website that the WordPress blog that we set up. The first one we got paid for was probably going to be what eventually became one of the e-commerce sites. I'm trying to remember the names of the sites and if they're still a lot around, or if I should share with them. I think it was called sunshinehope.com. And they had, like, an e-commerce store and a blog, and we used WordPress to power, you know, like, a CMS-wise, their website.
Nice.
So,
you know, thinking of the client now, the client-facing side, what questions should somebody looking to purchase WordPress services or even a plugin like you sell now, what kind of questions should they be asking these WordPress professionals, or to at least filter out and say, are you really a WordPress professional? Do you really know your stuff? What kind of questions should a client ask somebody?
That's a good point. So you, a client, I mean, for the most part, the clients, you know, they just want a website and they don't necessarily care about the technology. Mm-hmm. So we often invite our clients to come in and like take a look at WordPress from a demo, you know, like a demo WordPress site. So they see what it feels like, to use. And I guess your question is more like, you know, how can they filter out like mm-hmm. the ad WordPress developers from the good ones? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it helps for them to find someone who's built a site just like the one that they want, you know, and there are, you know, there's tons of WordPress developers out there right now, so that you shouldn't have to like take people's words for it. You know, you can, you know, say, hey, show me the site that you built, you know, yep. or let me take a look at that one, or do the demo in that other site, you know, maybe through a screen share or something like that.
Yeah.
Then walk you through another solution they did.
Yeah. I mean, I asked that question. I'm trying to see if it's getting more popular, if people are specifically coming to us as we're in the WordPress market or field, because yeah. I think the general civilian, if you will, is starting yeah. to understand what WordPress is. At least they know that people are powering their websites with WordPress, and oh, by the way, yeah. can I get a WordPress site like, you know, my friend in this, you know, business network? So I'm starting to see the folks that usually don't care about technology, and I still find that 9 times out of 10 they don't care.
Yeah,
we're introducing them to WordPress all the time. As long yeah. as it works, they, you know, they don't care.
Yeah, I think we definitely have people who come to us. They're amazed. They can, you know, they're moving from something like Dreamweaver or like I used to just email my web developer and they would make the edits. So they're very enamored with being able to, you know, make the edits themselves. And that's kind of what they're searching out for when people are searching out WordPress.
Nice. Going back into the freelance stuff, you know, give us a rundown of your, do you have a daily routine, time blocking, reserve time slot for certain things in the day? What's your rundown to your daily routine to get the day going?
Yeah. So it's evolving over time, and we do like probably way too much at any one time. Like sometimes when we fill out the whiteboard and you're like, what do we really have? It's either big or small projects, and there's like 30 to 35 things, right? So it's like it's a juggling act. And so I really do find I have to kind of segment myself and segment my time. And like one of the best things I do is like I turn off the Gmail. So like a lot of people work with Gmail constantly open, or they have the notifications come up. And it's just impossible to focus. Or when I got an Android phone for the first time, it used to, you know, vibrate same as if I got a text message every time I got an email. I'm like, this is not going to work. I get an email every 3 minutes.
Yeah.
It's
like, yeah. So
definitely like, you know, I'll, at the beginning of the day or the night before, I'll kind of have an idea of like, oh, this is like the one big 3 or 4 hour chunk of work, one project that I want to work on in the morning or the afternoon time slot. I usually have like a morning and afternoon time slot. And then like before and in between, I do the kind of general email stuff. I usually spend about an hour doing either support or development updates for Paid Memberships Pro. So I'll check into the paid support forums at paidmembershipspro.com and the WordPress.org forums. I have a couple Google alerts for WordPress membership and Paid Memberships Pro that I follow up on. So if someone had posted a review on YouTube about Paid Memberships Pro, which is how I discovered your podcast here.
Yep.
You know, it'll come up on my radar and I can check it out and add a comment.
Nice.
So, yeah.
As you're freelancing, I guess take us into that sub journey of freelancing, trying to get into the digital download and just paid services, online services market, trying to transition out of that. How is that going for you? What kind of roadblock or what's the hardest thing for you to make that transition?
Yeah. So again, it was motivated by that, you know, seeing other companies like WP Commerce, like, hey, we sell a product around what we did, and say, hey, I want a product. You know, I'm watching things like Mixergy and other, reading other, you know, blogs and podcasts of people who are getting recurring revenue, making money while you sleep. I think now at the time I thought like, hey, I want a product. I just want to sell in my sleep. And that's really kind of a dream that's being sold. Like a lot of, you know, they call it passive income, but it's not so passive. You still have to do something to earn that for the most part. But now I say, hey, if you have a services company, you should probably have a little bit of product, you know, and if you have a product company, you should probably add a little bit of services to it. So if you sell software, you know, sell the support services around it, or don't, like we do, we don't just sell the plugin. We also have a package where we'll install it for you, which is a popular plan because some people just want that to happen. So the journey starts kind of a couple years ago when we're building the plugin just for our clients. So we had like 4 clients who needed a membership site. And within like 3 to 6 months, we had built the plugin functional so that it would work just for them and I could install it. It didn't have fancy settings pages. It wasn't tested on every server configuration. It wasn't, you know, very compatible with a lot of plugins, but we managed which plugins were installed along with it. And then we had thought, hey, it would be about 3 months to take it from that internal state to a public plugin. And 3 months was really like about another year. So I remember it was like, I think it was probably WordCamp Philly in 2010, where I was like, yeah, you know, by the end of the year, we're going to have it released. And it was really like a year later at the next WordCamp. I was like, now we finally released it. I mean, that's one thing is that, like, if you're thinking in terms of a product, like, it's one thing to make it for your client, right? And then it's another to make it for the public. You really, there's a lot of, it needs to be hardened and tested. And there's lots of little things that you overlook. And then actually with membership sites, it's become kind of a design decision we have, because a lot of, so we compare it to like S2 member, right? Has a really huge setting screen of like, hey, if you want to do drip feed content, here's the drip feed content section. And if you want to do, you know, this, here's like the settings you have to do for that. And that's really good for some people who aren't technically savvy, like, so they can find it, but it's kind of a headache. But for someone like me, I'm like, oh, like, I want to ignore 90% of that. And all I know, like, I just want to have prorated payments, which is 2 lines of PHP code that I add to my functions.php. And now Pay Memberships Pro plus 2 lines of code is Pay Memberships Pro with prorated payments. And I don't have to worry about all this stuff I don't care about. So it's related to that. That's like a design, you know, with membership sites, we only get you 90% of the way there. And then you probably need a developer if you're trying to do something like highly custom. So it doesn't out of the box serve everyone. Yeah. You need a little bit of help.
Do you actively try to examine the audience of your plugin and say that, you know, most of these are developers, most of these are folks that really need that extra help to install it? And does that curve your decision on how you're going to take the path you'll take with the plugin? Like 37 Signals says no to everything, or at least they used to say no to everything, features and design. And
yeah, yeah, yeah.
So are you saying I want to develop this for the ultra beginner, or I'm happy making a product for somebody who's more advanced?
I think what we think is we want the very base experience of, I have a WordPress site, I want to charge X dollars per month for access to some part of my site, like dead simple to set up and do. So we do that. And then feature-wise, if they're like, oh, I want to also, you know, have an email list, like, you know, integrate with the email newsletter websites like MailChimp, because they do it better than we could, that kind of thing. Or if we want to do something a little different, it starts out as a technical, either a sister plugin or a couple lines of code that we give them custom to tweak the plugin to work in that way. And then if it's something that happens over and over again, where like a lot of people are requesting this feature, then we kind of consider either, you know, building it into the plugin, into the core plugin. Or we kind of have like a lot of what we call sister plugins, like for, we just released one, PM Pro Series, which is like drip feed content, which is another plugin you install alongside of it. So not everyone who gets Pay Memberships Pro cares about that, but if you do, you can install another plugin. And it starts out like very developer friendly. It's on GitHub. And again, if our idea is as they get more popular, we're going to refine those, put those in the WordPress repository and kind of make them more end user friendly. So our customers are kind of 50-50. End users and developers, and the developers, you know, like the tools that we give them, and they can do the gluing themselves. And the end users either are doing something simple where they figure it out, or they hire us for 1 or 2 hours to do that gluing of things together.
That's great. That's a great way to put it. Are any specific way that you're tracking these requests and you know that you're getting 5 of the same requests? Is it something that you're just like, hey, I keep hearing this over and over again? How do you track that?
Yeah. So, one thing we're doing more recently is I'm using Trello for management of, you know, some projects, and also for like the Pay Memberships Pro development flow. And Trello.com, T-R-E-L-L-O.com, is like a really basic kind of whiteboard emulator. I don't know how to explain it. It's kind of project management, but it's very light. It's meant, they want people to be able to manage, you know, development projects and also be able to like organize recipes and also be able to, you know, organize the softball team and the development team, you know, so they, it's kind of like a really general product, which I think is good for me because I can use it any way I want. But basically what I do in Trello, it has columns. And so I have for payment interest spread, like an incoming column. So anytime you email me, hey, I wish you could do this, you know, I add it to that column. Or someone kind of emails me again, I can put like an extra exclamation point in the title, or move it, you know, drag it around. And if it's something like I think is good or I like it, you know, I'll move it to the, like, we're actually working for the next release column. And it flows from there from like the next release to current release, you know, to-do list kind of style. And that's kind of a, the idea too is it's just one list of things and I kind of am constantly rearranging the priority of it. And it's, you know, it gets really long. If it's off the screen, you know, it's not important. You know, I mean, we could solve it for everyone. The other thing we do is
right.
A lot of these things, we have the, what we call the do it for me plan, which is $497, where if someone has a feature request that takes less than 5 hours to the code, like they can pay us to code it and we'll deliver it for them. And then if it is something that is useful for everyone, you know, we'll integrate into the plugin or release it alongside. And that's where it is kind of dangerous, though, because things like PayPal Standard, we didn't support PayPal Standard for a while, which is like the free PayPal level. Technically, PayPal Standard, there's like a disconnect. So if the other versions of PayPal, when someone checks out, they go to PayPal or they check out on your site, PayPal immediately replies back like, yes, Jason has the funds to pay you. It's all good, so you can create the membership account right away. With PayPal Standard, there's a lag. Like, they go to PayPal, and they may not come back to your website. They actually have to click a link to come back. And then PayPal in the background gets around to sending you a message like, this guy paid. So because there's that disconnect, it's, like, technically a little harder to do, so we kind of avoided it. But it is the most popular form of PayPal.
Right.
So we implemented it for the first time. Everyone constantly for a couple of years has been asking for it. In the fall, we finally implemented it. And a lot of people are using it. We're definitely probably selling more, you know, support for the plugin and, you know, do it for me plans because people are coming to it from PayPal Standard. But it's taken a lot of time. So, for instance, like Stripe, we upgraded from like the one Stripe is a payment processor to, which is dead simple, like really made for and by developers. We upgraded from like one of their API versions to another one, and it took like 10 minutes to test. There was no real change. It was backwards compatible. It was beautiful. I launched it in like one night. It was like less than an hour of work. And then PayPal, in the meantime, like I've spent tens and tens of hours, probably like 40 hours,
yeah,
at least since we launched it, with bugs that have come up just for PayPal Standard and, you know, in the way that they're doing things. So anytime you add a feature like that, you have to be aware, like, oh, I may end up supporting this.
Yeah.
And what's good is, like, our model is, you know, for most things, people are paying for support. So, you know, it's okay. You know, for the most part, whenever we're doing support, like someone either bought a support plan to pay for it.
You helped me transition to one of the other questions that I have here with your do it for me plan at $497. The question that I ask everyone is, how did you deal or how do you deal with that $500 client? And by that $500 client, I mean the guy or gal who comes to you and says, I got $500 to make a website. What can you do for me? You know, and then demand. How do you deal with that now? And how do you deal with somebody who's really new to this who would think that $500 would get them an entire site and not just the installation of a plugin?
Yeah, we definitely have to curb expectations. And I could talk like as a general, you know, from freelance, how we do it. But for PayMetrics Pro, what we find is at that $500 level, about half the clients are developers themselves who are like, hey, I'm building a website, but I'd rather just pay you $500 or rebuild that to the client to do the membership component. Because you'll do that really fast. It would take me forever and we'll be golden. And actually, that works out really well. And that's kind of like the ideal way for the kind of ideal work for us, because we like working with developers and they handle the client. And we just do the one thing that we know how to do really well. And about half of the people signing up with that plan are kind of end users, they're the business owners themselves who aren't as technical. And we install the membership component for them. But what happens is I'm pretty clear up front about like what they're getting, you know, so we make sure that like, you know, you're not getting the whole website, you're just getting this. And if you want the whole website, here's the quote for that, which is a lot more than $500. So sometimes they run away. But And sometimes we get them. Like, so we sold PayMentors Pro, you know, those plans, but also we've done consulting work, which was part of the plan too, is we want to focus on the membership sites. But what we find is after we do the do it for me for the non-technical user, we're now the smartest WordPress person that they know. So in a couple of weeks when they're like, oh, I wanted to add the Twitter feed to my website, or I, you know, this plugin I installed and everything broke, you know, or I got infected with malware, they now send us an email and are asking us how to do that. And what I thought and what I still hope is that I can find other WordPress developers or who are at the stage where I was a few years ago who are willing to take on like 2 to 3, 4 hour jobs. Cause we, you know, we have so much work coming in that we can, a lot of times, you know, we could say, hey, well, it'll be 2 hours, you know, 125 an hour, 150 an hour, and we'll get it done. But it kind of isn't even worth like working out the business arrangement for us to do 2 hours of work. So it's a little bit like we have a couple people we send them to who like some help, and we haven't found like the best, you know, the perfect team members or partners. That's why I go to all these WordCamps and things to find people. It's what's really hard is I think right now with WordPress, because there's so much demand, there's kind of a gap from people who are starting out and aren't kind of good enough to do the work with like plugins, you know, or develop so much, and then there's a gap from there up to like they're, you know, charging $100+ per hour WordPress experts. And I think there's just so much demand that people, you know, a lot of those people charging high rates, maybe they don't really deserve that high rate. But what it means is there's no one in the middle who's like $50 an hour to do that work. They're either too novice because they don't know what they're doing, or they kind of price themselves out of this kind of work that I can give them. Because there's demand in the,
Yeah, you're right. I mean, and that's kind of, and I'm going to reorganize my questions here after this interview, but that's kind of where I was leading to with the original question about what an end user should ask somebody who's an alleged pro WordPress designer or developer. I've talked about this with every, it comes up in every interview I've done so far, and I did a talk about this at the local WordCamp here, is that the barrier to entry of WordPress is so low, anybody can grab it, install it, or God forbid, do a one-click install on GoDaddy. And then call themselves a WordPress developer or designer because they can flip-flop through themes or plugins. It's very bad for our industry. And one of my initial, my very first WordPress, or my very first interview was Jesse Friedman, who wrote a book about this stuff. And we talked about, look, if you're going to really call yourself a developer or designer, please take the time to learn this stuff the right way.
Yeah.
Start learning WordPress the right way, how to update it, how to maintain it, best places to go to get this help. Look, we're all here. It's a community-driven project, right? Or most of it. So ask the questions, get involved, and just start doing things the right way so that you save face for us when the people come to the real pros. They don't get sticker shock, you know?
That's a really tough one. I wish I knew the answer to. It's like, I feel like, as what I said earlier, was like you kind of have to see the work to really like. So you want to make sure that you see the work. And I think if you're not a technical person, like you can't really look at code or anything or know how good it is or how recommended they come. These kind of what's kind of good is like there's a lot of WordPress meetups.
Yes.
And so if you're in a major city, that definitely is a WordPress meetup. And we meet, you know, kind of potential clients and people, you know, through those. I would try to find a WordPress meetup around you and go, and whoever's running it or like the core group of people or the type of first developer who's also going to a WordPress meetup is probably a little bit better of a WordPress developer, where you can ask around like, you know, hey, is Jason actually a really good guy?
Right.
Because that might be like the fastest way for someone to kind of find the expertise near you. So you don't have to necessarily hire someone near you, but you could kind of get a buddy who would give you a second, you know, opinion on something, you know.
That's a great point. We're going to talk about kind of the WordPress community in this next section. Let's just move one last question on the business side. I'd love to talk about more, but I'm just trying to keep it under the time cap. If you could go back in time, 1 year, 5 years, or 10 years, what are the ingredients or the process you would change to do it all over again in your business? Hindsight, looking at it now, what steps would you take right out of the gate?
Yeah. So I think about this back. So back in 2006, when we started, we had a plan. So we had this freelance work was like one arm, and then WineLog was another arm. And you know, we'd spend like a third of our time on WineLog trying to make that a business. And then we'd spend a third of our time kind of throwing ideas at the wall and like building really cool projects, and seeing if it would stick. So that was kind of like a mentality, a startup mentality back in that time, the Web 2.0 era. Like, let's make a mashup and see if it gains traction and let it sit. Okay. So nowadays there's this idea, you know, coming out of, like the lean startup movement, around minimum viable products and kind of earlier in the system, seeing if your product is really business, is going to make money. If there's demand for people who want to pay for what you have, there was like Facebook was just starting, and in that early Web 2.0 era, there was this idea of, you know, just build a website to get a lot of traffic and then figure out how to make money, which is an okay idea for certain kinds of websites that are going to scale to hundreds of millions and billions of users. But for the most part, like, these smaller, you know, like WineLog, for instance, actually, we kind of had that mindset. Let's try to grow it a lot and we'll figure out how to make money later. But if I would have started with WineLog earlier, like focusing on the business model and kind of having the courage to say, you know what, like, this isn't enough money. Like, sure, I can make, you know, a couple $1,000 a month this way, but I'm not going to retire now. I'm not going to, you know, be able to do something and be able to move on. So like to say, hey, like, so I should have been with some of our side projects instead of like, this is just new technology. And part of that's important too. Like, you do want to, like, every once in a while have like a hackathon weekend where you're like, hey, I just heard about this really cool technique. Let's try to build something neat. But just build it and have, hey, this is something neat. It doesn't have to like launch its own website. You don't have to build a mailing list around it and all these other kind of like little startup things if it isn't really a business. But if it is, like, get to the money right as soon as possible, and put it out there in that way and kind of focus on that so that you would really build a business around it. Because I think that I didn't have a lot of focus. And so we were doing really cool things for clients and we would hand it over to them and then start over from scratch and do something else. Whereas if I would have, you know, earlier said, you know, let's try to focus on e-commerce or Payments Pro or whatever, if it might have been something else at the time. And also when you have that focus, you have to pair that. You can't just have focus blindly. So if we had focused on WineLog, you know, I think we probably would have got to a point where we just, you know, wasted a lot of money and didn't really have a viable business. But we have to also have the courage to say, like, this isn't a viable business. Let's stop and move on. You know, so you have to have those two things, focus. And then you also have the courage to say, this isn't viable. Let's stop and move on. Cause you can get attached to projects.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're building it. It's your baby. That's the biggest thing is, you know, you have the passion to see it succeed and you know that, hey, this is great idea. And then you hit the public and they're like, this sucks. I'm not going to use this, or I'm using something else already. It's tough to cut that funding, or if you will, for a project that you're working on.
Yeah.
Let's talk about WordPress as the software and as community. You already started talking about it. Somebody who's starting out to improve their WordPress skills, What's your best bet? Get involved with the community, go to WordCamps, go to meetups, things like that? Or is there somewhere on the web that you would direct folks?
I think the meetups and the WordCamp things are really important. And as my children are getting older, I have a 4-year-old and a 1-year-old. So now that my daughter is about 1 year, she just turned one, I'm going to more WordCamps and kind of getting out of the house more. And those things are like so valuable for us. Like, no matter like how much we're paying the travel or stay in hotels, like definitely meeting face to face, we're getting kind of like good business relationships out of those. So I think that's definitely important, and for people starting out as well. You also want to get involved in projects. So I would love, like, you know, the developers who are getting involved in Paid Memberships Pro, and like our code's on GitHub. So there's a lot of plugins and stuff like that where are up on GitHub and they're taking, you know, pull requests and kind of, you know, pairing alongside a project like that can give you access to clients, can give you access to, you know, someone who has been there before. You could ask me questions about how to do things, you know.
That's a common answer that I hear, is getting involved with somebody else who's already doing a project like yourself, like a plugin, like a theme. And some folks have recommended freelancers who are just starting out to try to get work with another agency or a larger studio that can filter business to them to kind of get that experience.
Yeah, there is this kind of ecosystem. It's like us. We're definitely getting too much work, and there's a kind of project that comes in that, like, we're either charging too much for it or it's something we don't really want to do anymore. And so I wish there was more people to kind of throw smaller projects and stuff like that. And so just building stuff and, yeah, having focus.
What's your one, all the good stuff said about WordPress and community and stuff like that, what's your one gripe with WordPress, and how do you think it can be improved?
One thing that I think they've done better with it, but one thing that used to bug me is how often the UI was changing. Some in the admin, so somewhere from between like 2.5 and 3.2 or something like that, it would, like, you know, 3 months later, like, we had just installed WordPress, trained someone how to use it. 3 months later is a new update. Hey, look how easy it is, one click update. And then, you know, now the menus fly out instead of, you know, are always available on the left side, which is maybe, like, it's better UI for people coming in. And I know that the UI team has to struggle with this. Like, they want to design it in a way that's good with, like, best practices for now and for, you know, the people who are just coming into WordPress from other applications, but the people who have been using WordPress, it's really jarring for them. So I don't know if I really have an answer. And I think they've done better. Like, the last couple updates haven't really changed things. You know, the buttons are more square than they used to be, but other than that, you know, they're not. But I feel like there was a few kind of arbitrary UI updates, and I think they've stopped doing that. There was kind of like, you didn't really have to make that. It's just confusing, you know.
There was the old, you know, set featured image, and it already set it and saved it. There was no need to even have a button, or there wasn't even a save button. You had to close the box. So it was like, God, I just, please do away with that. But now they have the 3.5 media update, which is tremendous.
Yeah. I think probably I expect over the next couple of years, like, on just like there's themes for the front end, there's going to be a lot of themes for, like, the WordPress back end. Like, I'm starting to think about and play with that a little bit ourselves, and
awesome. And
kind of like, if you're doing a minimal blogging experience, like, you know, you have a separate, you know, admin, or maybe a way to, you know, build admins on the fly for customers, or kind of, you can do that stuff now, but, like, if it's exposed in an easier way for people, because WordPress is being used on mobile and tablets and all this stuff, and they, you know, they want WordPress to be used for applications and other verticals and things like that, and so the admin is still, they're kind of tied to this, like, blogging paradigm a little bit, and CMS paradigm, that there's going to have to be some kind of break, and there's, you know, what the admin is going to change over the next few years.
Yeah, that's a great prediction. Well, let's go into the next segment. Someday I'm going to have music and intros and all kinds of crazy stuff going on. But this is the What's in Your Toolbox. What piece of software besides WordPress or hardware do you use to run your daily business? Like an Evernote, like a Gmail, like an iPad? What do you have that you couldn't live without?
Yeah, so I already talked about Trello a little bit, which I've stuck with for a while. So I've jumped from project management software to project management software. And I think what happens with those is you start fresh. So you're like, this feels good, and do one project with it. And almost any of them work really well for one project. And then you move all of your projects into it, and they're like, oh, this is bloated and I hate visiting it. But since I've switched to Trello, like, I almost did that, but then I pared it down to say, like, you know, I don't need a board. Trello's like their own version of projects. For every project, I just have one. And so what I did, like, it really did, like, I used to do this thing on the whiteboard where I was like, here are the things I'm going to do today, and here are the things that I have to do this week, and here are the other things I should be thinking about. And I just moved that into Trello and shared it with, like, the core team. And it's kind of like, you know, here's my, and that's the way it's laid out. The things I have to do today, the things I have to do this week, and the things, you know, outside of that. Whereas a lot of times, like, you know, if the things I have to do this week, that guy was emailing me today, I would really do it today, you know, because I was using my email as a to-do list. But now they have that board, I can really, like, have the focus to say, you know what, that isn't a today thing, that's a this week thing, I'll get to it. And also, you kind of, with all the work coming in, there's, like, a visual recognition of, like, when there's more than 10 items in that today thing, or actually more than 5 or 3, like, I'm not going to get the item 7 and 8, you know, like, to just be like, whoa, I got to slow down, and I can't, like, one thing I constantly do is, someone will email me like, yeah, I'll get that tomorrow. Because in my head, like, of course I'll get to it tomorrow. Like, I, Like, I'll do the things I was planning to do today, and then tomorrow, what was I going to do? Like, I'll do that, but that's not really. Tomorrow, I'm actually going to do the other half of the things I didn't get done today.
Yeah.
I'm always, like, one day late when I went. So if you get an email from me that says, like, I'll get that done tomorrow, it's probably 2 days from now.
Yeah.
But the Trello has helped me kind of curb that a little bit, where, like, I see that I have too many things already on that today and that this week list. You know, so I can, that, like, I'll get it done tomorrow is becoming, like, I'll get that done this week. It goes onto the week list. And if the week list is too long, it's, like, I can be honest and say, hey, I'm not actually going to get it done this week. I'll get it done next week.
That's great. Perfect. So let's move to the listener question. We got one that came in today from at JJJ. Thoughts on users having multiple roles, interested in making this more streamlined in WP Core?
Yeah, so like, so JJJ is the Buddy Press.
Correct. Where, he's an automatician.
And one kind of example of that that's come up with Buddy Press is they want, they have authors and subscribers, right? So some can post to the blog and some can't. But in BuddyPress, some of the subscribers are moderators and some of the authors are moderators, right? So a moderator, I think BuddyPress adds a moderator role. I'm not sure, but, you know, a moderator is kind of like not outside of author or subscriber. It's like an additional thing. So that's pretty interesting. Like one way, like I kind of get around this issue a lot because with Paid Memberships Pro, a lot of membership plugins like piggyback on the roles. So they say, hey, a new membership is really just a role, and you define a role, and you give someone a new role when they sign up for membership. We thought about doing it that way, but we didn't want to be so integrated into the WordPress roles that we said, hey, really a role and a membership level are two different things, right? So a role defines like what you, how you can interact with WordPress, and your membership level defines like how much you're paying per month, and we have our own system for like which pages and posts you have access to. So a lot of times we use the membership level as that kind of like, so they have a role and a membership level and some things are attached to both. So some, we kind of custom code around that a lot. I think it's a good idea. I guess it would have to make sense for core, like just vanilla WordPress without plugins, or it's, well, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it can just be like an API feature that developers use. But I can see kind of like people getting confused by it, like just normal users. So you have to be careful with that.
Yeah, definitely. Interesting question. We can keep that discussion going on Twitter when we launch this one. Let's hop into the lightning round where I'll ask you a series of questions in a quick succession, and you will have hopefully answers in 10 seconds or less. The one plugin you cannot live without, obviously, besides your own.
All right. We use ThemeIlogin a lot, which is another, it piggybacks great before Paid Memberships Pro. It makes your login page on the front end instead of the back end and has some other features.
Nice. Favorite WordPress or business book?
Let's see here. I'll talk about it, The Lean Startup by Eric Rise or Arista. That's a great, you know, for people who are trying to, how to think about their business.
That is a great book. A quote you live or run your business by?
Oh, man. I'll be bad with quotes because I have a terrible memory. So maybe I'll pass on this question.
Okay, no problem. the best business or career advice you've received?
I was thinking like, so I definitely read a lot of like great blogs and posts and stuff like that. But I guess one thing that's good is about thinking in terms of investing in yourself. Mm-hmm. So I forget who was telling me about it. I think that was back in the Accenture days, was that you're saving money in your IRA, and you're like, I spent, you know, thousands of dollars or whatever to save for my retirement. A lot of that money, if you invested in yourself, you know, it would do better for you over the long run. So you kind of, if you think about the money you spend, you know, books and learning and going to board camps and stuff like that as an investment, you know, it makes you feel better about
nice.
Doing that, I think.
That's a great way to look at it. The longest a client project has ever taken?
Wow. So, I mean, we had one that's still changing. It's been over 2 years, and it's kind of the same product. I guess it's changed names a few times, too, but it's kind of the same product, but it changes every few months. So we definitely have one that's over 2 years, and we're still working with that guy.
Nice. That is, I think that might be the longest one so far.
Yeah.
Who should I interview next?
Who should I interview next?
I already got Pippin on the...
Yeah, and I was one of the... Yeah. We had some things we can talk about together. That's a good one. Have you had Brad Williams or anyone else from Modo Studios yet?
Nope.
Brian Messlener? Yeah, actually, maybe interview Brian Messlener about WordPress as an application framework. I've been talking with him a lot about that, and I think he has a lot to say about that kind of aspect of WordPress.
Sweet. If you had to switch to another CMS, what would it be and why?
Wow. I really wouldn't want to. I probably would do it custom again. I was really anti WordPress, as a CMS in the beginning, and I kind of backed into it and discovered it. So there's not like one on the shelf that I would jump to.
It's so funny. When I interview developers, it's always, I'm going to just build my own. When I'm talking about designers, it's like some like niche, like indie CMS. And then when I'm talking to marketers, they're just like Drupal or Joomla. They just get like these quick things that they already have in the back of their mind. That's awesome. Wrapping it up, what was the one question I didn't ask you that I should have?
You probably asked me questions around this, but one thing I wanted to talk about was to developers who maybe like are thinking about getting into the plugin space, or they have a plugin already in the repository and they're trying to figure out how to monetize it. One thing I've learned a little bit from talking about Paymetrics Pro and business models at Pressnomics and some recent WordCamps is like our model is working pretty well. We're not retiring, right? So like our plugin sales for support is like 10% of our business, right? But it's doing well and it's growing, has a lot of opportunity. But it also, what we did was, so we have a plugin, the full version is in the repository. We don't have a light version and a pro version. The full version is in the repository. It's all on Codebase. So people can download it for free and they never pay us, and we just charge for support. So if you have a plugin already in the repository that you're supporting for free, or you're ignoring that support thread because you don't have time, just set up a website where you use ours as a model, where you say, hey, buy our plugin for here. After they buy, give them a link to the zip file that's in the repository and the access to a BBPress support form, and then give them support and figure out what the pricing is that makes sense for you. So for us, like $100 for the support plan, if one in five, everyone who signs up is like a partial hour of support that we really give them. It's really like, 20% of them we spend 4 hours on, and, half of them we don't even ever talk to. They just find the support themselves. So there's a lot of business models out there, and I thought I was leaving a lot of money on the table. Like there's models for plugins like ours, like Pippin's uses like the extension model where, there's core plugin is free and you buy extensions, or the light version of the plugin is free and you buy the pro version. And there's a lot of headache and overhead in kind of managing the different code bases that if you just, it's all the same plugin and you just charge, for access to support, you avoid that. And and I thought I was leaving a lot of money on not using the extensions model, but what I've learned kind of off the record with some of them is the conversion rate is about the same. So if 100 people download Paymetrics Pro in the repository, we get only like 1% of them will sign up for $97. So we make almost $1 per download. And I heard from some other people, I don't want to get his names away, but it's about the same. So they use the extensions model, and, out of 100 people who sign up, about, 1% of them buy an extension or a couple extensions, and the average is 2 extensions. So it comes out to like almost the same amount of money. I thought their conversions would be a lot bigger because, the extensions are kind of more core to the experience. Whereas we give a lot of stuff away for free that's in the plugin. But it doesn't seem to be the case. And the other thing is around support. We're kind of learning, but what's hard is like, you can't help everybody. Like people in the WordPress.org forums have gotten really good where they're like, how do I do this? And it would take me 5 minutes literally to write how to do it. It's like 2 lines of code. I have it. And it would take me 5 minutes to say, yes, that's possible. Sign up for support. But I do the latter, right? I say, yes, that's possible. Sign up for support. And every once in a while, I still use your judgment. I give solutions in the .org forums. I say, I'm not getting as much backlash as I thought. I'm sure that some of the 1-star ratings are Paymetrics Pro, or like someone had a bug that was very specific to them. And I said, you'll have to sign up for support for this. And they're like, whatever, 1-star. So I'm sure it's backlashing a little bit, but a lot of people are like, oh, I understand, And so if it's a bug, we still help them in the .org forums, because we want our software to be good for everyone. But if it's like, they're trying to do something specific to their website, I kind of say, hey, you should go over to the paid support.
Yeah.
And what's funny is I find that in the holidays, I was a little bit ignoring the .org. There'd be a questionnaire, how do you do this? And then no reply for 2 days. And then they sign up for support on PayMerchants Pro, and they say, how do they do, how do you, I do this? And I'm like, I pay attention to that one closer, obviously. And so I answer there. So it's like, I always find that like my, the amount of money that comes in for the support plans is like inversely related to how much free support we give out. So that's the other thing you have to manage. And I think a lot of people feel like they have to give free support, but like you kind of don't. It's okay if you charge for support. So
no, absolutely.
I think it can help some people who like have a plugin out already or want to release a plugin, but they don't want to, they're struggling with the business models, that we have what I think is a really simple and user-friendly business model of like all the code is free, pay for support. It's a BB Press form, access to my cell phone and my email address. And you know, it might change in the future, but it definitely is a way that we're generating revenue where people are using our product and the product's getting out there and we're kind of growing the business. So.
Nice. That's an awesome, that's an awesome answer to an awesome question that I should have asked. But we learn as we go here, and I'll definitely, at some point, maybe we can do that collaborative interview with Pippin, and talk about business models and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because that's a really, some great insight there, and that's awesome. So, wrapping up, I just want to tell everyone, if you want to see more interviews like this, head on over to mattreport.com. I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter so that I can email you and tell you when these awesome interviews are out. It's mattreport.com/subscribe. So, Jason, thank you for doing this interview. It was awesome. Where can folks find you? How can they say thank you on the web?
Yeah, so follow me on Twitter at Jason_Coleman, and also find out about me at strangerstudios.com or paidmembershipspro.com.
Awesome.
That's ways to get hold of me.
Yeah, if you need a membership site, definitely check out that plugin. Make sure you pay for support. And if you don't know how to install it, definitely let Jason do it for you. It's a heck of a lot easier. So far, your plugin is in the lead on the membership series that we're doing over on the podcast episode.
I know you like Magic Members too, and it made me want to like take another look at it. I haven't looked at it in a while.
Yeah, I mean, Magic Members was pretty good. But
I think it was the drip feed. You were like, oh, Magic Members has drip feed. Yeah. We just launched the PM Pro series stuff, which does a lot of that. So
that's awesome. We're still going to figure out how we're going to do a finale of the winner, but we got two more to do, and then we'll have a wrap-up show, but... Anyway, Jason, thanks a lot. Everyone, thanks for watching. Go say thank you to Jason on Twitter for doing this. Go check out his site. Go check out his plugins and everything else he does. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
Bye.